Hello, this is John Alsop, and this is your Internet Marketing 5 a Day. First up is getscopeapp.com. Scope brings together your favorite services like Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, Instagram, and Tumblr, so you stay up to date with the things that matter most. It's an app for Google and BlackBerry, and it's kind of an integrated social media driver front end. So I guess you can take a picture and upload it to all of those services: Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, Instagram, Tumblr, without going into each service. So I mean, it's one of many such services. I haven't played with the app myself. I'm told it's a sweet way of doing it. But I mention it really because one of the resistance points that people always say to me about taking on social media, if they're not involved in it already, is I haven't got time. Where am I going to get the time from to tweet or to answer questions? And it's a bit like the question, well, how are you going to get time to answer your customers when they phone? Okay, and it's the same answer. Your customers are going to be on Twitter, they're going to be on Facebook, and either you're there or you're not. And if you're not, then you can't hear what they're saying, and you can't contribute, and you can't do anything about anything, but your competitors may well be. So, you know, if you feel that way about social media, switch the phone off and close the shutters in your shop and carry on running your business, see how far you get. So the answer then is to be efficient and effective about your use of social media. It's not to deny it, but to find ways of doing it. And one of the pretty much essential tools is to have a smartphone, because with a smartphone you can literally almost mid-conversation, without kind of breaking your stride, take a photograph and upload it to Twitter or upload it to Facebook. Whether you use this Scope app or not, you can still do that. That doesn't feel like work. It just feels like actually a way of saving a moment for yourself, but you're also sharing it too. And what might happen is, for instance, if you're a designer, or you're involved in a particular market, let's say you sell shoes and you see a particularly great example while you're traveling on the tube or you're walking along the street, and you take the photograph and you upload them, then perhaps your clients will go, "Whoa, I really want a pair of those." And, you get some feedback by the time you're back in the office. Maybe you've worked out with some feedback from the industry people that you're connected to, or somebody in your office has seen that picture that you uploaded and they've already sourced, found out how they can get hold of them. Or, and you've seen that there's some demand from your customers, they want them, and so, the whole thing comes together. And that all happened while you were traveling, So it speeds things up, it builds community, it builds conversation, and speed is very, very much part of it. So, equally the same argument is that while you're traveling, I actually got a tweet back from one of my heroes, John Snow of Channel 4 News. I was up at about 5 o'clock in the morning. John Snow tweeted to his followers that he'd gotten on the train and was going up to Lancashire to interview somebody for a Channel 4 Dispatchers programme. And, not many people are up at 5 a.m. So I tweeted back, "How do you best use that travel time?" I was curious. And he tweeted me back, "Yay, I'm famous because I touched a famous person. And he said he was preparing for the interviews. He was reading emails. He was reading Twitter. And he was watching the beautiful English countryside sail past. So that was kind of him. And there you are. He was sat there reading his emails and reading Twitter as part of his research and as part of interacting with his customers, clients, people, network, community. And you would do the same if you were using Twitter on a smartphone or an iPad or a laptop. So social media gives you something to do in the downtimes. That's how it can be effective too. Okay, on the other hand, the Channel 4 Dispatchers app is awful. I wanted, what was it? It was a program on, I think it was perhaps about banking, I'm not sure. But I felt inclined to, I wasn't going to watch the program, but I thought I'd just kind of touch it, connect with it somehow, and get the gist of the program. That's kind of what I was aiming to do. And perhaps I thought I could watch it live, I'm not really sure. But I thought I saw that I could download the app, the Channel 4 Dispatchers app. It's on Twitter, it's at C4 Dispatchers. So I did that, and then it said, well, all right, you've got the app. Now you need an account. You've got to register with Channel 4. Right, you're on your mobile phone, okay? So you're not at your desk. You haven't got your logins. And who is ever going to know whether they've ever registered with Channel 4 or not? So, you know, I'm on the hoof. So I thought, well, I'll register. I didn't think I had registered, so I registered. And then it said, all right. Now, we've sent you an email. So, we want you to check your email and click that to prove that you are who you are. Why? I mean, okay, fine, that's nice. In a desktop application where it matters, why do you need all that for me to connect with the Dispatchers app? That's overkill. So, all right, track that down, sorted it out. And then the Dispatchers app, the content was what you might expect from a company locked into television. So lots of graphics, infographics, as if infographics was what we wanted on our smartphones, to kind of deliver the information that was contained in the program. And it isn't really. I mean, I skimmed over those infographics, and it might work on an iPad, but for my smartphone, looking around an infographic, infographics are huge. My screen is small, so I either was looking at it too small to read anything, or was zooming in and then losing my context and having to kind of swim around in all this stuff. It was total rubbish. And so what was wrong with it is that they hadn't accepted that apps are a different medium to TV. And they were applying TV rules to the app that they've developed. And so that's common. You know, magazines do it to the web, and radio did it to TV. You know, it happens. And the idea, I mean, you almost can't avoid it, and so you kind of have to learn what the new medium has that the old medium didn't have, so that you find your feet in the new medium and you lose the things that you don't need anymore because the new medium does it a different way. So really what the Dispatches app should have been is social. It should have been delivering information in a very, delivering the guts of the information that was contained on the program and allowing you to see snippets of the program to get the kind of emotional part of it. Allowing sharing and so on. And allowing you to kind of easily find other programs on similar, you know, that they'd produced on similar subjects. And I don't know whether it did this or not, but one of the things it did as well was it wanted to let me know about future stuff that they were doing, which is kind of fine, but you know, I would like them to do that on the back of the app being a really successful and nice thing, not here's an app that is wrong in all kinds of ways and also we want to sell you stuff. That just wasn't right. So get your apps right. The MS Society, mssociety.org.uk, has a nice use of video. It's professional without being too flashy. And it delivers the right content. So, you know, they've really thought about what they want to say about the illness, and then, you know, roped in some sufferers who were willing to go on camera, and I think they've just done a nice job. So if you fancy, and also it's appropriately placed in the page, so if you fancy, you know, having a look at a good use of video online, I think mssociety.org.uk is a good one. Time's short. I don't often spend half an hour watching something unless I'm really persuaded by it. And I've put up a link for Tim Brown, More Perfect Typography. It's vimeo.com/170793800. And it's a talk that he gave, and I've forgotten what it was for, but it's a tech and design gathering in Ireland, presumably annually. Let's see if I can just see it. Give me 2 seconds. No, I don't think I can. It's about his talk. It's a video of a talk, a half an hour talk, and he's talking about typography on the web. And not really being a designer myself, not a graphic designer anyway, I used the rule about the web, which is that you can specify a font, but in order for that font to display on the client's screen, that font has to be on their desktop, on their machine. You're not delivering fonts from a server across to them. They have to own the font. And there's a very limited subset of fonts that, well, you can't guarantee that any font is going to be on a user's screen. So what you end up with saying is, this is going to be a sans serif site or a serif site, or it's going to be I can't remember the other ones, but there are 5 of them, and that's really all you, I mean, you can obviously change the colour of a font, italicise it, size it, bold it, underline it, those kinds of things, and do your line spacing and your column widths, all of those bits of typography. And not kerning, but character spacing, I think you can do. And indentations as well. And you can even do initial letters, you know, make the first letter of every paragraph bigger, make the first paragraph of every page bold, all those kinds of things you can do. But the fonts were always very, very limited. And so I used that as an excuse, really, to not bother with fonts. But now that's changed, because the new HTML and CSS allows for the delivery of fonts across the internet, and there are services to help with that. I can't remember if I think I've put up a link to one of those. And this presentation really does a beautiful job of talking about fonts and typography as the beginning of design and the beginning of making a website that feels right, at the beginning of creating a pleasing design and a design with good rhythm. And so in that video, you know, I've done this for years, I've done my job for years. That video changed my mind about fonts and typography. I'm now a fan. I don't know anything about it, but I'll learn. That's the way it goes. But I'm now into it. So have a look at that. That's good. I think that was one of your favourites from yesterday. And the final thing is this idea of, there are several people in my inspiration file from which a lot of this podcast is derived, who are talking about kind of destroying the focus on Western consumer societies and looking more broadly at the world, and perhaps for kind of social reasons, for kind of saying, well, you know, let's help these other countries get better, or just to sell more. And internationalization is one of my beefs. I quite like not being blinkered into one country. I quite like the idea of doubling or tripling or quadrupling your market. And I've got some stats that are coming up later on that will, I think, surprise you about how many internet users are actually not American and not European. But this tweet is about, I tried to look up as well, Hewlett-Packard, I can't remember the woman who led it for a time, and they were very much into enabling technology for low-income countries. So they were trying to get kind of every African access to computers, and that, I think, perhaps what it ended up with, because I couldn't find much about it, is that was a nice idea, but actually what those people use as a computer is their phone, and so that's their technology, and that's appropriate technology for you know, a farmer or a village person, and you know, who perhaps doesn't have that much access to electricity and so on. But the principle anyway, what if you gave 10% of your something, whether it's money or time, to the 75% of humankind in need? And so if Hewlett-Packard are doing that, would it make you more likely to buy from Hewlett-Packard? So is it a loop, a feedback loop? If Hewlett-Packard say, all right, our people and our resources and our time and our money, 10% is going to help the 75% of humankind in need, does that persuade you to buy from HP as opposed to, say, Canon? I don't know if Canon, I don't know what Canon is doing with it. You know, sorry to malign them, I don't mean to malign them, but let, you know, any other company. And if so, does that make you HP the leader in the market, and does it make you more than 10% more income? So if all that works, everybody benefits. That's it for today, and tomorrow's Friday, we'll talk then. Thank you very much, and goodbye.